This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. A recent report released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimated that as many as 1 in 68 children in the US have autism. The increased prevalence would inevitably lead to more marriages where one or both spouses have Asperger's syndrome, a milder form of autism. What are the challenges of being married to someone with Asperger's? Well, in conjunction with Autism Awareness Month, we pose this question to, of course, in our monthly show, US licensed marriage and family therapist, Dr. John Ben Loy, and also in the studio with us, counselor and play therapist supervisor Sudha Kudva and clinical psychologist Dr. Elvin Ng. Welcome all of you. How are you today?
Good.
You know, Autism Awareness Month. Dr. John Ben, what made you want to actually discuss this? Did you even know that you could have been marrying someone, you know, who could have Asperger's syndrome when you were getting married? It never crossed my mind.
I could have, because I didn't know people who had sort of social awkwardness. They were my friends, some of them. And I actually had a cousin whose son was severely autistic, not at all verbal, not at all communicative, and he needed serious treatment right from very young. So I was familiar with this diagnosis, having studied psychology as well. So okay. I would have been able to spot something.
I want to know how you spot this, Dr. Elvin. First of all, autism spectrum is it's a spectrum. Yeah. They refer to it as autism spectrum disorder, right? And Asperger's is supposedly the milder version. On the spectrum, but a milder version. Yeah. But could you just tell me in layman's terms, how would you describe this disorder?
Okay, well, I guess I would say that autism is a name or a category for a bunch of symptoms that a bunch of deficits, and that the three main ones: firstly, social understanding; secondly, communication; and the third symptom would be having rigidity in daily interests. You're rigid in the things that you do, the way you play with certain things, having to have certain things in place before you feel okay. So I guess you can say you can be quite obsessed with certain interests or games.
How do you differentiate them from someone who has obsessive compulsive disorder, for an example?
Okay, that's going to be a separate thing, but let me just explain.
Sure.
It is quite tricky when you get to that level. The main thing to look for is these deficits, these difficulties in socializing, in communicating, and also having a variety of interests would need to affect your daily functioning. It should bring distress to yourself as well as to other people. Mm-hmm. And these are the typical symptoms we see in a person on the spectrum. It can be very severe, it can be less severe. Of course, it becomes more difficult when it's less severe because there's some social awkwardness, but you don't really know if a person has got a certain deficit.
Okay. Yeah. For me, the given is always eye contact.
Usually that's the case, but it's not true for all.
Yeah.
Okay. So Asperger's as opposed to, what are the typical symptoms of Asperger's?
They would have very good communication, seemingly. They can talk very well. They seem very intelligent. They know their topic very well. They can speak about their own interests, topic of interest very well. Mm-hmm. But they may have difficulties understanding that you're not the only person talking. You know, it's an exchange. Mm-hmm. They may have difficulties understanding social cues, such as a person not seeming interested in what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So you may go on and on and on about a topic, and then the person will be, look, you know, I'm really quite tired. No, it's, you have to listen to this. This is like really interesting. So that kind of difficulty, understanding that kind of social cues, to stop talking or to take turns.
All right. Yeah. Do you see many more and more people being diagnosed with the condition in Malaysia?
That's hard to say, because it depends on how a person's diagnosed as well. Because from my experience, diagnosis is not done properly.
Yeah. Are we over-diagnosing? Are we under-diagnosing? Sudha, you deal with a lot of children.
We are not properly diagnosing.
Why is that, Dr. Elvin?
Well, I suppose because it's still a relatively new disorder to Malaysian healthcare workers, Malaysian professionals. I say relatively new because we are only starting to know more and more about it, and our public is still not very familiar with what autism is. There's still a lot of mix up with, for example, attention deficit disorder. Some people think that both the same thing.
Yes.
But in terms of autism, why it's still not very well known, I guess it's because of exposure.
Okay. Yeah. In terms of Asperger's, do they have learning disabilities as well, like dyslexia and ADHD? Do they come together, or
not necessarily? Asperger's is just Asperger's. You cannot say that they have a learning disability. The only disability, or rather deficit I would call it, is that they have difficulties understanding social cues, mm-hmm. and the need for certain types of communication, reading of faces, and at the same time, again, back to that slightly obsessiveness and rigidity in their habits.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that they cannot read, as in dyslexia, or they have difficulty staying still, as in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
They always say Asperger's is mostly a hidden disability. What do they mean by that?
A hidden disability because they don't seem dysfunctional. You know, you can have a very intellectual conversation with someone who has got Asperger's, but I say Asperger's because that's German way. I mean, it depends on which country you come from.
Yeah. But I'm going to switch now.
Yeah.
And say it the right way.
I think it's the official one, Asperger. I used to say Asperger as well. But anyway, to answer your question.
But thank you, yes. And the other thing is, you know, to always not say autistic, but to refer to them as
having autism.
That's right. To refer to it as ASD.
However that identifies them.
Yeah, I think it's respect as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, you were
anyway,
saying.
Anyway, yeah, to answer your question. To answer your question again.
We were talking about, okay, never mind.
Yeah, why is it a hidden disorder?
That's
it's because when you say disorder, you expect someone to be really outrageously dysfunctional, mm-hmm. you know, and causing a lot of distress, having lots of distress. But when you look at someone on the spectrum, if they're high functioning, like Asperger's, they conduct themselves very well. They may be very well organized, but when it comes to socializing, they could be a bit awkward. And this may be seen as someone who's just shy, slightly awkward, and we don't think very much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's a nerd, you know, they are just bookworms. They prefer to read than to socialize. And these are the typical terms that we call people who may be on the spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like a recluse.
Yes.
You know, could be, right? Mm. Gosh, it's such a fine line. I mean,
it is a fine line.
It is a really fine line.
I mean,
you
get plenty of professor kind of characters who are really into their work, you know, very smart. But when it comes to actually just even saying hello in the corridor, they seem very odd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The mad professors.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah.
One research paper I'd published studying students from Cambridge, those who are math winners, and the control population, a sample, and they found that many of the ones that qualified for the math prize also qualified for the Asperger's screening.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you saying?
I don't know what I'm saying, but that's what the data suggests.
You're implying a lot of things, actually. Dr. Sudha, you
well, implication doesn't mean causation.
Yeah,
so
yeah, correlation.
Implication only. Yeah,
it's a correlation. It's not causation.
Yeah, it's just so important that should a child get diagnosed or diagnosed by whoever, to see that label as a starting point, mm-hmm. and not as a destination or a destiny of the child.
Right.
Because there's such a big range within that, and the environment does play very much.
You know, you specialize in play therapies,
Sudha.
But with so many different people on the spectrum, how do you then come up with programs, play programs for them?
No, we don't have. It's a very non-directive form of play that I practice. And so it's allowing the child his space to be his own, to be his own boss, to come into himself and grow into himself. So if he plays very unimaginatively or very concretely, in time to come, he could start using his creative skills, which is not part of, that happens automatically with a child with Asperger's. Yeah?
Okay. Do you see a lot of children who are overdiagnosed?
I shy away. That's a huge issue I have, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't go by labels for a child.
Sure.
Because I like to see a child as a child is.
Okay. So since it's a standard sort of thing, so it doesn't really matter for you.
Yeah.
But where do they move on?
In school, you hear many children diagnosed as hyperactive, they have hyperactive attention deficit disorder, blah, 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 so many things like that. It may be that the teacher has less patience with the child. Mm-hmm. And maybe the child has a bunch of worries and he's running around in the classroom and he can be labeled.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Sudha because, you know, the diagnosis helps to point in a certain direction.
Yeah.
After that, you need to take away the full stop after the diagnosis and do something about it.
Yeah.
Which is really the problem.
Thank you, Alvin.
Yeah, because the main thing of, I mean, what Sudha is talking about, being a play therapist, you are looking into play as a facilitating activity to help the child explore the world and to understand the world in how other people might understand it. So there's mutual play. That's how you learn about each other in a very natural setting.
Mm-hmm.
And with regards to autism as a whole, diagnosis is one thing, but that's where I like the words deficit, because you know that you're lacking something.
Yeah.
And if you're lacking something, you got to teach it. And these are skills. Skills that I call adaptive behavior skills. Communication, daily living skills, social skills, and in some cases, motor skills, movement skills.
Right.
Yes.
So hence the show today. I mean, if left undiagnosed, then you know, Dr. John Benn now has decided to set up a support group for partners who, you know, one partner actually has Asperger's.
Yeah, and another way of understanding Asperger's, some people call it high functioning autism. So, you know, they can function well enough to seem like nice people and maybe somewhat quirky, but not someone you can't partner with. And so they end up marrying. And then when I'm working with some of these couples, I started noticing that the regular couples therapy didn't quite help. And I was sort of, I mean, I was also trained in, although I can diagnose, licensed and trained to diagnose, I tend to do what I'm better at, which is therapy. And so I try not to use so many labels as well. But I really had to go to some kind of an understanding as to what was going on, because my normal therapy work wasn't helping.
Right. So what did you do then?
Called
Dr. Alvin.
Yeah. I mean, it's
sending them over.
You do spot these unusual behaviors, mm-hmm. And then you do have a classification in your mind, but you still have to help them. And sometimes they're not willing to go for a diagnosis, and a full testing can be quite expensive as well.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I got my hands on a fairly good screening instrument. It's actually a variety of screens as well, and started using them with their permission. And many of them actually scored within the, what I would say, the cutoff range, right? Or around there. So meaning that they may have a likelihood of being able to be diagnosed as having Asperger's, or they could have something else too. The screen doesn't rule that out. It only looks for one thing. That's why you have to go, say, to see, you know, Dr. Alvin, and then he'll do the whole battery of tests, yeah, to know that it's not this. It could be a memory deficit. It could be something else. Yeah, so you want to have really good differential diagnosis to know what's going on. But if a screen is all that they can afford, then, you know, I just do that. And I say, if you want to see someone, go and see Dr. Alvin.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are some of the issues that seem to come up or surface during these sessions?
Dr. Alvin was talking about rigidity in patterns and habits seems to come up a lot. In terms of their interests and their repetitiveness in certain things. And it's typically not about human, social, emotional things. Yeah, it could be anything about today's interest is fruits, or today's interest is fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that interest could last for a year or 2 years, and it's all fishing. I had one lady talk about apples. Somebody said, oh, I really like apples. The next day, the fridge was filled with apples that you couldn't possibly finish. You know, things like that would happen. So that's one. And then the other thing is not being able to connect with them emotionally, you know, in an intimate, nuanced way. You could just say, well, that's just a man. But these are men that I can't seem to coach emotional awareness into them. Whereas many, I do have many executive men come in and they do struggle with the area of emotional awareness or intelligence, but pretty much within one or two sessions, once they get it, they can't stop feeling, you know. But these men, I can't really get them to get in touch with that.
Okay. And when you talk about, how come all of this doesn't surface when, you know, they're dating or even before marriage? I mean, wouldn't something like this surface at that stage already? Unless, of course, it was an arranged marriage, you know.
In all the cases that we're now working with, something else was going on.
Oh.
Yeah. With the partners, with the wives in this case. We're only working with men who could potentially have Asperger's. So the wives were either going through things for themselves, or they might have come from a painful background, and these men are safe. They're nice people, right? They're very predictable, you know?
Yes.
And so they're like, so, okay, you know, I'm not going to be abused here. Something
right.
like that,
okay.
you know? Or they might have a very strong motherly quality about them, and they want to take care of someone administratively.
More maternal.
So there was a matching. But they, you know, they didn't realize, I guess, that there was deficits that maybe had a limit, that there is a ceiling to how much they can learn in terms of social, emotional understanding, etc.
Dr. Elvin, is it true that more males seem to be affected by Asperger's?
Yeah, apparently so. More male than females, I think, 5 to 1?
Mm-hmm. That's a
one.
Lot.
That's a lot, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're a man, you're more likely to be on the spectrum.
Very John interesting.
Well, that's
20%.
A really interesting looking microphone right there.
Yes, and
that's 20%.
The note that says, please leave Studio A remote here. There's no remote there.
There.
You're gonna do something
I'm
about
putting
that.
It back now.
It has to be back. Has to be.
We're discussing Asperger's and marriage. Interesting topic. Dr. John Benloy in the studio with us. He set up a support group for, you know, couples. One person has is on the spectrum, one person doesn't most of the time. I'm wondering if both could be on the spectrum. Is that quite rare, or, you know, what do you think?
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really hard to say.
It is hard to say. We'll come back and find out more. If you have a question, our phone lines are actually open, 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. If you have a question on autism, Asperger's, and, you know, your partner, if you have a question, send it through. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. It's The Bigger Picture, and I'm Mira Sivasuthi. Here for his monthly show, Dr. John Benloy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist. And coincidentally, it happens to be Autism Awareness Month, the whole month of April. So he's brought in counselor and play therapy supervisor Sudha Kudva, together with clinical psychologist Dr. Elvin Ng. Dr. Elvin actually diagnoses and sees a lot of cases as far as people on the autism spectrum disorder, isn't it, Dr. Elvin?
Yes.
You know, some of us might be panicking right now that we could be on the spectrum. How do we even know if we are? I mean, and if Asperger's can be subtle, it can be hidden to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I could be having Asperger's syndrome, right?
Yeah.
How would I know?
The thing is to not be too bothered about the name of the diagnosis. Whether you are or are not on the spectrum, the main thing to look at is, are there any deficits that you have that is leading to you being dysfunctional in certain areas or causing distress? I would want to look at those.
Yeah.
And sometimes a certain deficit may point towards a diagnosis, but that's only a guide. It doesn't label you forever. It is not a full stop where you say, I'm on the spectrum and that's it. A diagnosis to me is to help you understand, okay, you may have this set of symptoms that show that you have certain kinds of deficits and there are certain things you can do about them. So I would encourage you not to panic.
I'll try.
Yeah, I apologize for bringing that, you know, concern up just now. But
No, but I think just discussing
it is a hidden disability. So
yeah.
Which is
at
concern.
Least if you have some difficulties with your partner and you see certain signs that may point towards autism spectrum, then perhaps you can better understand, okay, now I get it. Mm-hmm. This person has difficulties understanding certain nuances. You know, me being sarcastic doesn't get to him. Perhaps it is autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And given that understanding, you can do something about it and have a different approach and different attitude towards managing that relationship.
Okay. Our phone lines are open, 0377-109000, if you'd like to ask them, all the experts, a question, whether it's autism spectrum disorder, whether it's Asperger's, or even your marriage. Dr. John Ben, what comes to mind is, right, you mm-hmm. would be people who go for therapy, marriage mm-hmm. therapy. That would be the place in which someone could pick up that one individual could in fact be Asperger's or have Asperger's syndrome.
Yes.
It's hard to go to Dr. Elvin straight away, don't you think?
I mean, very hard.
It's quite difficult because this is a relationship issue, right? So that would you would ideally be the best person.
Well, that's where it shows up. Let's put it that way. But not only in the marriage does it show up as sort of more problematic, but also in the workplace. Mm. So we were talking about diagnosis and that panic. The other thing that I also notice is that sometimes people know one thing, like they've been working with children with autism for a while, just as helpers, but then they. Every time there's something that looks like it, they might think, oh, there we go again. That's autism. That's Asperger's. But actually, it could be a variety of different things.
Yes.
It could be, my mother's dying of cancer and I can't focus. And, it could be anything. That's the other caution that I have is you really have to, I have in front of me the DSM-5, right? Big, thick book. And you have to know all of it before you can diagnose because you have to know what it isn't.
Yep.
Yeah, you have to rule out certain things that could be.
That's right.
There's so many factors that can lead to someone behaving in a certain way. That's why it takes ages to diagnose. And that's one thing that I think everyone should know, that when you go for a diagnosis, it's not a look-see or hearsay diagnosis where it seems like it, therefore it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch certain films or series out there like House, he has a whole whiteboard full of possible diagnoses and he slowly cancels out and takes a whole show to cancel out and you have to watch the whole series to know what the actual diagnosis is.
That's right.
Mm. Yeah.
So when couples come to you, Dr. John Ben, is it just a matter of adapting and adjusting or how do you help them out?
Well, that's what I was scratching my head. And last year I started looking around at the internet and I actually found somebody in Australia who's actually, working with couples and running support groups. I just wasn't able to find very much out there. And finally landed on a few books that were available, actually brought to me by my clients. Once they were into it, then everything was about let's figure out autism and nonstop reading.
Okay.
You can imagine that. And then they started educating me. What I'm doing now, what Suda and I are doing now, well, first of all, if I can't help, I better find help. So, that's what I was doing. And then also bringing in Suda because these women were pulling their hair out because they don't know what to do. And they also feel guilty, that they are all nice men. They're very nice people. And why am I the bad one? But I don't know what to do. Should I leave this marriage? Should I stay in it? And so pulling Suda along and then running the WISE group.
Support group.
Yeah.
Which is the non-ASD partner.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
That's
and right. How's that going to them?
At least they're having common grounds. They can see I'm not the only one going through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that gives a lot of support.
We spent the first couple of weeks just talking about what are the similarities and differences.
Between
their experiences with their spouses. And one person that came for the first time, when I did the screening, it didn't qualify at all. And then so she didn't join us for the next ones. It looked and sounded like it from hearsay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, when we put the screen on and when I met him one-on-one, I said, I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is helping to a very large extent.
And because we're not in that experience, I didn't quite know how to help them in their ongoing chronic challenge. It's ongoing.
Yeah.
So having the support group that people are not going to say, you're just being difficult, because that's what they hear outside. You're just a difficult woman. Yeah.
Oh, you were expecting too much from the husband.
That's right. The husband's so nice.
Yeah, lovely guys.
That's not fair.
Yeah. And so having a support, that now they don't feel like they are out of place. It normalizes their experience. You know, they cry together and they laugh together. They share. And I think that's really needed. And now I'm slowly trying to get one of my colleagues also to specialize in helping the men. And we're just really learning as we're going right now.
They always talk about how early diagnosis is so important. I mean, I'm thinking if you're already in a marriage and, you know, with children and stuff, is that too late, Dr. Elvin?
It's never too late. Yeah. No, you can always do something about it. I think it's good that we're talking about this in terms of a marriage approach, because most of the time when we talk about autism, it's about severe autism in children.
Always.
But we hardly ever think about adults with autism and how they cope. And this is a huge area, because transitions is not something that we have been very good at, especially among health workers, health professionals. We tend to focus just on the one spot. So in terms of adult experience of ASD, there's a whole range as well. Here we are talking about the more high-functioning ones who tend to be ignored because they seem too, in inverted commas, normal.
Right, okay. Yeah. And I think that has been some of the concerns as well, right? We always focus on the children, but eventually these children, and many of whom have grown up and now lead adult life. Mm-hmm. And what happens to them? We don't really hear much of their challenges.
Plus, when it comes to Asperger's, usually they tend to be high achieving at school. They do very well academically. They may come up with very high degrees, but when it comes to actually working and in a working relationship or even in a romantic relationship, they actually suffer because they have difficulties, again, relating. And this is something that I think should be addressed.
Okay. Yeah. How are the children who are growing up with parents, one parent having Asperger's, how are they coping?
Yeah, I'm probably, you might know.
I would say it's still quite a new area for me, because I normally see children with autism rather than adults with autism and seeing their children. I would say, it might be difficult for them watching the dynamics between the mother and father, how they behave. And, you know, it's still something that I would want to.
My guess is when the children are young, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, daddy, let's say, you know, is able to relate with them on a very functional, practical level. But once they start developing their social, emotional there's nuances, then something is not quite there for one parent.
Hi, Aini, how are you today?
Hello. Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am. Could you turn off your radio, please?
Yeah.
Okay. Your question?
I heard somewhere that you can do brain training through acupuncture. I wonder if it's possible that it's something to do with the your mind or your brain left and right, and can help.
Oh dear. Thank you. Thank you very much, Aini. I think Dr. Elvin will take that call. Thank you.
Hi, Aini. Well, one thing you need to think about when it comes to autism is that it's a skills deficit disorder where skills are lacking. So if you go for any alternative methods, they tend to only help with maybe improving certain parts of the body, perhaps the brain, to bring better communication within the person, but it doesn't teach the skill. You need to really focus on finding out what's missing, what's lacking, and teach that skill.
Okay. Another question from Lim via text message. Dear doctors, what is your opinion on the neurodiversity movement, on how autism should not be treated as a disease?
Well, I can agree that it's not a disease. You know, it is, again, back to having a lack of skills. We teach the skills. And let's treat the brain like a city where you've got highways, roads and stuff. And that's what we call our neural, you know, pathway. And if we don't build those bits properly, through nutrition, through exercise, through all kinds of movements, then the information is not going to get to where it's supposed to get to properly. But having said that, you may have the best highways in the world, but you don't have transportation to go on it. It's not going to be very good either. This transportation that I'm talking about are the skills that you need to learn. going to put the transportation on the highway to do the things that you do to function as a city. Otherwise, it's going to be just an empty city.
Right. Okay. Yeah. We're discussing autism. It is Autism Awareness Month. We're discussing Asperger's syndrome, actually, and marriage, when one person, one partner actually has Asperger's, and the challenges that come about with it. If you have a question for Dr. John Ben Loy, Sudha Kudva, she's a play therapist, as well as Dr. Elvin Ng, clinical psychologist, give us a call, 03-77-109000. We'll be back after a market update on BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasuthi. Dr. John Ben Loy, US licensed marriage and family therapist, with me, Sudha Kudva, who's a counselor and play therapy supervisor, together with clinical psychologist Dr. Elvin Ng in the studio with me. We're discussing Asperger's syndrome and marriage, when one couple, in a couple, one partner could possibly be having Asperger's syndrome. How do couples like these actually cope? You know, when you talk about you teach them skills, right? What are we actually referring to the person who has Asperger's syndrome? What sort of skills are you teaching them?
Well, these are basic skills to survive. Skills that we tend to take for granted, such as, you know, a basic greeting, hello, how are you? And even in saying that, Sudha, we were all discussing earlier that, you know, your distance between the other person has to be appropriate. And how do you respond to someone greeting you? Mm-hmm. Do you respond in a robotic way, or are there other ways that you can do certain things? You can play around with things. That's where play comes in, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But on skills also, can you look after yourself? Can you take care of yourself? Mm-hmm. Many of us assume that we all know certain skills, but when it comes to socializing, when it comes to understanding how to communicate, even like jokes, one of the telltale signs of a person on the spectrum is they have got difficulties understanding jokes.
Okay, I have Asperger's syndrome. Then. I'm quite sure of that.
No. You just cracked the joke.
No, I'm serious.
No, let's clarify what he means by joke. Suppose I say it's,
please,
you're cool. And then it's as a phrase, I'm saying that you look cool today.
Yes.
So how does cool come with you?
Right.
They can't get it in that level.
Okay.
Yeah? They're very literal at times. It could be.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very literal.
Yeah.
Okay, I still think
so it's, yeah, it's about teaching these little skills to help them function in life when they're socializing, so they don't seem too awkward.
Mm-hmm. Dr. John Ben, is it individuals on the autism spectrum disorder, are they capable of maintaining romantic or intimate relationships?
I think they want to relate. Probably, you know, with the deficits, it's more difficult for them to be able to relate in quite the same way. I personally know someone in my 20s, a friend from a church who displayed all of that, plus, you know, a lot of Tourette's sort of tics, who eventually got married. She, in this case, was very desirous of relationships. And I think maybe a long time ago, you have to verify this, someone had told me that, you know, with Asperger's, they like people, with autism, they didn't. It was a very simple way of describing it.
Oh, really?
I don't know how nuanced you can make it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's like they like to talk with people,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, they don't really
relate
and want to be. So it's kind of like a paradox in itself, kind of thing. But you cannot say it's not true for everyone. Everyone on the spectrum. This is where, you know, it there's a danger of stigmatizing the whole syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where you start labeling someone who's on or off. But that's where if once you go into that kind of labeling, you need to also understand, okay, what are we actually talking about here? It could be certain limitations, certain deficits. So back again to something that's more accurate about the person. How is that person not functioning if they're not functioning? How is that? What kind of difficulties is a person going through? Let's deal with them.
And if you do know, you know, that your partner or the person you're going to marry does indeed have Asperger's syndrome, then how do you prepare yourself for that?
I guess, you know, here, there are some books that I bought. Can I show you?
That's a lot of books to go through in 10 minutes.
Well, just let me, I'm not going to go through the books, but here's a couple. There's been now people writing, people in long-term relationships. For instance, here's one by the wife who is does not have ASD, Ashley Stanford, S-T-A-N-F-O-R-D, and she wrote a book called Asperger's Syndrome and Long-Term Relationships. And then there's a New York bestseller called The Journal of Best Practices. It's not a journal. It's a memoir of marriage, Asperger syndrome, and one man's quest to be a better husband. And he himself describes himself as an ESPY, you know, David Finch, F-I-N-C-H. So there are resources out there available now for people to read up and understand better. There's also this book, which I like quite a bit, by Tony Attwood, A-T-T-W-O-O-D, called The Complete Guide to Asperger's Syndrome. These things can help, but again, you know, labeling and identifying just one thing on a person may not be the best way to go about access good professionals who can provide a better diagnosis if needed.
Hi, Ling. How are you today? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Ling. You have a question? Yes, you are.
Yes. You were saying that Asperger children,
yes.
I mean 17, 18, not more children, right? Adults. They do very well in academically. Very well.
They tend to,
huh?
Yeah.
But they're not good with skills like saying hello.
No, they have difficulties. Doesn't mean that they don't know how to make friends. They can have friends. Yeah. They can make friends, but
there were other times that I read that Asperger are very violent. Tend to take drugs.
No,
do that in your adult life?
No, Ling, you need to be careful about what you read. There is no such thing as an overall picture of how a person with autism is. If there's any violence, anyone can be violent, but the main thing is there is difficulties understanding social cues, social signals, managing their own emotions. Those are the main things that they have difficulties in.
Yeah.
That may lead to violence.
I have another question.
Yeah.
I'm having a child who is 18 now, right now. I don't understand whether he's having Asperger or autism, because he's doing very well in school. Never give me any problem until he's 16. All this thing comes out. Then I read more about it.
Okay.
Him.
Yeah, Ling, I would caution you.
You
should bring him to someone to check out before you think of any diagnosis.
Yes.
It could be something else. Can be anything, actually.
Yeah.
So just because you're read on autism doesn't mean he's autistic.
Yeah.
So please don't scare yourself that way.
Can I
Thanks,
have one more question?
Yes.
What if when he reaches like 17, 18, he dislikes to take a bath, you know? He will do it like 3 days. Only I take a shower because I'm always in an aircon room, I'm always sleeping, I'm always reading, so I'm clean, you know.
Okay.
What kind of syndrome you call this? Or how do you?
It can be anything, Ling. Yeah. We don't know. Yeah. So
bad hygiene syndrome.
Perhaps. But do see a professional.
Yes. Go ahead and do that, Ling.
Whom shall I go to?
Well, our experts are in the studio. I tell you what, if you hold on, I will get my producer to give you the number. Just hold on, yeah? Hold
Thank
on a
you.
Second. Okay, bye-bye. So there you go. Interesting. A lot of misconceptions, isn't it, out there?
So much. Mislabeling misconceptions.
Yeah, how do you deal with that? Do you see a lot of that, Sudha, when they come for, especially trying to cope with partners who have Asperger's.
If they understand where it's coming from, then it brings you a sense of control over with what you are dealing with, yeah? And then you are able to more understand the situation and come to terms with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For example, suppose you were, Jane and Peter, let's say, and Peter has Asperger's and Jane is a normal person, yeah? In inverted commas.
Yes. Non-ASD. Okay.
Non-ASD. And Jane is really crying. And Jane wants a hug from the husband and is expecting a hug from Peter. And she goes and stands near Peter. But Peter may not get it. And then she could land up feeling rejected and feeling sad and, you know, he doesn't care for me and all that. But if she could ask for that hug and she knows, yes, he has an issue of being able to relate emotionally. But if I did ask for that hug, he would give it to me.
Sure.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that, Dr. John Ben? I mean, should spouses married to someone with Asperger's, mm-hmm. deal with this unmet, these unmet met expectations? How do you deal with that?
Oh, I think the non-ASD spouse needs to grieve. Find people who, a safe place where they can grieve. And that's why we started the support group. But then also, the spouse also needs to work on, think about herself and how does she contribute to the dynamics. There is, yes, you know, maybe he has a deficit, but maybe you have an overcaring nature that you may need to tone down a little bit because you're burning out. One of my clients is, you know, would from time to time say in our group, you know, the way that, you know, I work with her, with them, with her husband, is very slow, very basic. Just asking him, did you hear this? You know, what is your understanding of it? Okay. It's you know, I want to make sure, I go very slowly to make sure he understands everything. And when it's calm and not in a sort of fighting situation, he's very pleasant, very, very pleasant to work with. And so for the wives, to understand their reactivity could contribute to the partner, the SB partner, having difficulty even thinking clearly because they are maybe in a panic situation or they can get upset after a little while. So really think about it as a dance, not just that, say, your partner is the one with the disorder and you're not. There is a relationship that also needs to be managed.
Could the marriage heighten the Asperger's?
I'm not sure if it heightens it, but maybe makes it challenging for the individuals.
And brings it out, I suppose. It becomes more prominent.
Makes the symptoms stand out.
Stand out even more. We're running out of time. Dr. Elvin, your message on Asperger's syndrome in marriage.
Well, I suppose get educated, learn about it, and talk about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sudha?
Oh, yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. And learn about yourself, too. Then you know how much you contribute positively or negatively to the relationship, yeah? Mm-hmm.
I think that goes for anyone, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Dr.
Yeah. Well, I like to think systemically, and I like to think that we should gather together, learn together, and especially a word to mental health professionals or those in a helping profession. Yeah. Don't think that you know it all. Yeah, there's a lot that we don't know, but together, if we can talk, we can learn, we can help people live better lives, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining me today, all of you. Dr. John Benloy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, Sudha Kudva, who's a counselor and play therapy supervisor, and Dr. Elvin Ng, clinical psychologist on Asperger syndrome and marriage on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.